This is Focus 580, our morning talk program, our number two of the show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. In this hour of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the problem of homelessness. Numbers vary, but it has been estimated that maybe as many as 3 million people experience homelessness in the course of a year. It's certainly the case that homelessness has been a problem. It's been something that we've experienced here in the United States, going back perhaps even to the beginnings of the country. However, beginning in the 80s, we saw historically high levels of homelessness, and they have continued to be high in spite of the efforts of government and non-governmental organizations to try to do something about it. Recently, many communities have indeed made a commitment to end homelessness through local plans. At the same time, there are places where they have imposed criminal penalties on the homeless and also on the people who try to help them. This morning in this hour of the program, we'll try to get an update as we talk with Michael Stoops. He's the acting executive director for the Washington, D.C.-based National Coalition for the Homeless. Since 1972, he has been working full-time, primarily as a volunteer, with homeless and formerly homeless people and also homeless advocacy groups. He was a founding board member of the Coalition and also joined the staff in 1988. He's also project director for the National Coalition for the Homeless National Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project. He's joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk, questions from people who are listening certainly are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that means if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number. And we'll pay for the call. So if you're listening around Illinois, Indiana, anywhere the signal will travel, you can use the toll-free line. And also, if you would happen to be listening on the Internet, as long as you're in the United States, you may also use the toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Mr. Stoops, hello.
Good morning, David.
Thanks very much for talking with us.
Yes.
I certainly appreciate it. Just to talk about numbers first, and this is difficult. It has always been difficult to count homeless people and to come up with numbers that you can have some confidence in. And of course, it gets a little bit more difficult, and maybe we'll get into this too, when you try to define, well, who is it that you're talking about and who do you count, whether you count people who at some point in the year are homeless or whether you're counting people who are chronically homeless. Or, you know, we'll maybe look at that a little bit deeper level. But what now do you think is a fairly reliable number? If we just say in for a year, during a year, how many people at some point are homeless? What kind of a number would we have?
The best numbers that are out there, about 800,000 people are homeless on any given night, and over the course of a year, 3.5 million Americans experience homelessness, and we think that's the most reliable figure that's out there. A recent study done by government data shows that 56% of the nation's homeless are sheltered and 44% are unsheltered. So whatever number we come up with, we're definitely not helping all the people who become homeless in America. Mm.
That's a really stunning, the number of unsheltered people is really stunning. Now, that does not, though, necessarily mean that those people are sleeping on the street, or is that what that means?
Well, it means they're not either in housing or in emergency shelters or transitional programs like they have there in Champaign, Urbana, and most American cities. It means that they're living in their cars, they're living in woods, they're living in doorways, and so unsheltered means what it says. And in this country, we have, for whatever reason, we've all grown accustomed to seeing real-life human beings living on the streets and sidewalks of our downtown areas, and we just walk right on by as if they're part of our urban landscape.
Something else that I think is noteworthy is that if you take a look at the trends over time, they're apparently particularly, I think this is something that's been true over maybe about the fast 5 years or so. Maybe it's not doesn't go back that far. But anyway, the point is that if you look at various segments of the homeless, there has been a significant increase in families with children who are homeless. And in fact, from what I read, this is apparently the fastest growing segment of the homeless.
All right. For every guy you see at a freeway ramp with a cardboard sign, "We'll work for food," that's like the tip of the iceberg. And there's another 9 people who you don't see. The most recent stat says that 41% of the homeless population are comprised of families, and women with children historically has been the fastest growing segment of the homeless population, and the second fastest growing segment that people generally don't think that homeless people work, but the second fastest growing segment is the working homeless. We have people who are working part-time or full-time at minimum wage jobs, but they can't afford housing in their own communities. So we have people who are working full-time, living on the streets or living in the shelters.
Certainly we know that this is not a new problem in America, and we certainly do know that going back, say, to the 19th century, there were people who were operating, I suppose, what we would call today shelters that were trying to, particularly in big cities, places like New York, for example, where they were trying to provide shelter for people who needed it. But it does indeed seem the time when the numbers really shot up, when homelessness became a big problem, and the problem that it is, was in the 1980s, and it has continued to be at levels that really are disturbingly high ever since then. Can you talk, say, just about the trends? And if you take a look at the last couple of decades, for example.
Well, I've had the opportunity of working with homeless people full-time, primarily as a volunteer, since 1972. Mm-hmm. Some of my liberal friends wrongly assume that homelessness began when Ronald Reagan became president in 1981. Before, in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, there were the skid row alcoholic and the mentally ill person who had been tossed out of our state mental hospitals. So they were there before the cutbacks and important entitlement housing programs in the early 1980s. But if you remember, President Reagan was pretty popular during his first term, and he got through tax cuts, cuts to the federal housing budget, and the Democrats were not willing to stand up to, or could not stand up to, a popular president. So beginning in like 82, 83, we started to see more men than women for the first time, other than the mentally ill woman on the street corner. And then in the mid-80s, we started to see for the very first time families. And in fact, every year since the mid-1980s, we've seen a slight increase in the numbers, and also the cross-section of the homeless population continues to be broad, that everybody is winding up homeless, whether you're elderly, you're sick, you're a young adult, a woman. It now happens to everybody, and 25% of our homeless population are children under the age of 18, and I never thought we would ever get to the point in our society that we would say it's okay for a child to become homeless in America, but they're out there too, so there's really nobody left except journalists. Maybe if they become homeless, they'll write more about it.
Certainly, a number of explanations have been offered, including the deinstitutionalization movements that we saw actually going back to the 1970s, as you say, cuts in federal spending on poverty programs, on support for low income housing. There has been a downtrend in the economy. There have been all kinds of things that have been offered as an explanation. Is the answer, in fact, yes, it is a combination of all of those things? And perhaps
for every homeless person, there's a different cause and a different solution, but there's some general trends. In the 1960s, the Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty had some successes that still continue today. The Head Start program, the Job Corps program, the community action agencies that are nationwide. But the war in Vietnam siphoned off many of those resources. So the war on poverty, we lost it in the 1960s due to our involvement in Vietnam. And I think today's war in Afghanistan and Iraq, $400 billion plus, is siphoning monies away from important domestic issue. So it's a problem that continues. The federal housing budget, when Jimmy Carter was president in 1979, was $83 billion. Today, the federal housing budget is about $33 billion. So the reason we have homelessness in this country is that we have cut back the housing budget that helps low-income people subsidize their own housing.
Just one more question, and then I have somebody here I will get to, and certainly people who are listening are invited into the conversation. It seems to me that we may now be at a point where, this happened fairly recently, where we're talking about a shift in tactic on how to deal with this, from something that says what we're going to do is provide emergency services to people in need, emergency shelter, and emergency food. And we say, well, we've been doing that for a long time, and we still have the same basic problem. So maybe what we have to do is we have to say, instead of just treating the symptoms on an emergency as needed basis, what we need to do is actually say, look, we have a much bigger problem here, and that what we need to do is make a commitment to dealing with it, and not just in the short term, but in a more permanent way.
I agree. We should be focusing in on helping people who need help this very night. But we will be doing charity, acts of mercy, volunteerism for the next 50 years. We need to attack the root causes of both homelessness and poverty in this country. And we see the three leading causes to be the lack of affordable housing, the lack of universal health care, and the lack of good-paying jobs. The majority of homeless people are chronically normal. All they need is a decent job and a house they can afford, and they need health care, and they can solve their own problems.
How many people who are homeless actually do have jobs?
A study done a couple years ago found that 42% of homeless people worked during the previous month. And if you think that homeless people are lazy in any city in America, get up at 5 a.m. and go to your local day labor center, where people get up hoping and praying at 5 o'clock in the morning that they will be called out for a day's work. The majority of homeless people do want to work. The ones that aren't working, many of them are physically and mentally disabled, and they're not capable of holding down a part-time or a full-time job, and we have an obligation to meet their emergency needs.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Michael Stoops. He is now the acting executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless. It's based in Washington, D.C. Questions are certainly welcome, and we have several here. We'd like to join into the conversation. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, starting with someone in Champaign and line one. Hello.
Good morning. Also, before I make my comments to your guest, I want to thank WILL for being on the air in this dreadful weather when most of us are snowed in, and I think that's really super. I imagine you're on a limited staff, but there you are, open and functioning. So, in a wasteland of snow, WILL is a welcome friend. I did think about the homeless in this particular storm. I guess it takes something really, really horrendous for us to remember those around us who are not so fortunate. And I think your guest is absolutely right when he delineated the three things that anybody needs to be a self-respecting and functioning person. And it is pretty clear to me that this administration has put us deliberately so deeply into debt with a stupid war and stupid things like Star Wars defense system, so that they can say, well, gee, we just don't have any money for all these social things that we used to do, and we didn't do them very well even then. So I guess I'm preaching to the choir, but I think that anybody who's listening and who is concerned about people should definitely vote Democratic in the next election. And I'll hang up, and I know that your guest is non-political, but seems that social services do better and preventative social services do better under Democrats. Thanks. Bye.
Well, okay. You can comment on that any way you like.
Well, no matter who's in the White House or who controls Congress, I've got a number of calls in the last couple months. Well, now that the Democrats are in charge of Congress, everything's going to be hunky-dory, and we have to continue to fight to make Democrats act like Democrats. We hope that the presidential campaign in 2008, that I know John Edwards has talked about the two Americas and Barack Obama, I'm sure we'll talk about poverty. Dennis Kucinich, the congressman from Cleveland, who's formerly homeless, talked eloquently about poverty. We need to get candidates of both parties or all three parties to make a commitment to ending poverty in America. We should do it in Africa first because people there are much worse off. But we have the resources in this country, not just to shelter people, but we need to house people, provide medical care and decent jobs, etc. So we're hoping that the presidential campaign, that some whatever candidates, whatever party, will make ending poverty and the affordable housing crisis major campaign issues, because they are, to not just homeless people, but to teachers and firefighters and the working poor are struggling paying housing costs in this country.
There is, and as I understand it, and you tell me if this is not correct, there's only one piece of federal legislation that funding to direct service of the homeless. This is the McKinney-Vento Homeless Assistance Act. It was signed by Ronald Reagan in 1987. Is that still the only federal program that's specifically targeted to putting money into providing services for people who are homeless?
That is the only federal law that's been passed, and I had a hand in getting that passed in 1987. But today, that act provides funding for $1.5 billion for the whole country. You could spend that amount of money in Illinois or Indiana, and there would still be people homeless. So it's clear that, I know it sounds like a Democratic solution with a big D, but we simply need to be putting more money, both private and public dollars, into addressing poverty in this country.
And do you have the number of how much private money?
That number is kind of hard to come by, but I can tell you that the private sector, the Salvation Armies, the private nonprofits, the churches, the synagogues that are opening their doors, the private sector is doing much more than what our own federal government is doing, and we think it should be equal, or the Fed should be doing more. We don't want the federal government to run anything, but we think the federal government, you know, we don't try to fight wars abroad with private donations. We need to fight poverty here at home with taxpayer dollars.
Let's talk with someone in Pontiac. This is line number 4. Hello.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I do work at a community action agency. I'm in a smaller rural county. Mm-hmm. We don't have a shelter here, so it's very hard to convince our community people that we have homeless people. We have families that are doubled up, that are tripled up, that mothers who are having their kids move home with them and then in threat of being evicted because there's too many people in the household. I've worked frontline for a long time, public aid, public housing, and now with community action. And what I'd like to say is this, all over the country, is a community issue, and every community needs to wake up and solve it at the local level. We can throw a lot of money at it from the federal level, and that might help. I don't know, President Bush zeroes out my program every year, but luckily they don't listen to him. So I don't know what the answer is, but I do think awareness and raising awareness. We have a small homeless coalition made up of providers here, and we hold a homeless fair every year and try and promote it in the community to make people aware of what's going on, and no one comes, and they don't believe us. So if you have any ideas for how we can get people to, first of all, believe that we actually do have occasional people sleeping under the bridges and in their cars, but more the problem is it's very invisible in rural areas.
Well, a shelter or a soup kitchen is not necessarily the solution. It does make people aware that there is a problem. And in a rural suburban area where there's no shelter, no soup kitchens, people say, well, we don't have a problem.
Right.
Homelessness only happens in Detroit. And if we build a shelter in rural Michigan, we will have those homeless people come from Detroit to our community. So I think awareness and educational activities, you do have food pantries, you do have community action agencies. Anybody in the right mind would know that there are people working in your community at minimum wage jobs who are still living in poverty. And so I would continue to focus in on that there are people who are struggling with housing, health care, poor-paying jobs, and we need to address those issues. And speaking at colleges and high schools and with young people in churches and synagogues is really what I would recommend.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. I just to underscore what the caller said, I think that it's really important for people to keep in mind that homelessness is not just a big city issue. Smaller communities have homeless people. There are homeless people who live in rural areas, and that you may have situations where you have somebody who does not have some place to live themselves and has been taken in by friends, by family. They have some place, so they're not on the street. But you really, technically, you should count in your count of how many homeless people there are. You should count that person, but they're not going to be as visible as that person who, unfortunately, would be living on the street.
Yeah, if you're in a small town and you see, just about every small town has at least one or two visible homeless people. And, you know, in the big cities where there have, like Los Angeles County, there's 90,000 homeless people on any given night. And I can tell you we're probably not going to end homelessness in L.A. in the next 5 to 10 years, even though we want to do that. So I think in small town America that you have the opportunity of helping and making a difference in an individual's life, and also making sure there's some kind of emergency social service infrastructure to meet those folks who temporarily become homeless in small town America.
We're already at our midpoint here. I'd just like to introduce again our guest and get on to some other callers. Michael Stoops is the acting executive director for the Washington, D.C.-based National Coalition for the Homeless. They do have a website, so if you have web access, you'd like to know more about them, it's www.nationalhomeless.org, or you can just put in the name of the organization in your browser. I'm sure you'll find it. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And our next caller here is on our line number 2, and the caller is in Champaign. Hello?
Yes, it's an honor to speak to you, sir. I think your work is fantastic, extremely important to our country. I just wanted to double-check something and then ask a question. Did you say 3.5 million homeless a few moments ago?
3.5 million Americans become homeless over a 12-month period of time, and on any given night, there's about 800,000 people who are homeless. And we always think there's room at the end, especially during the holidays or when you have snow on the ground in the Midwest. But nationwide, there's such a lack of emergency shelter beds, let alone housing, that 23% of all homeless people who seek shelter are turned away. And for families, it's even higher, 29%, because there's fewer family shelters and there are shelters for single men and single women.
What I wanted to ask you about then, given those numbers, I study Japan actually, and I go to Japan quite a bit, and when I go to Japan I do see homeless on occasion, and there are about maybe 50,000 people homeless, genuinely homeless in Japan, which would be out of, what, 125 million people.
Mm-hmm.
So you compare the numbers and we have an astronomical rate of homelessness in this country. What I don't understand is it doesn't seem simply a disregard for the poor amongst politicians and the general public, but almost a kind of disdain. I wonder, are you trying to compare, for example, our policies and so on, and point this out, for example, to politicians, how it is that we treat the poor compared to, for example, the kind of infrastructures and social policies that have been set up in Europe and places like Japan and so forth to deal with homelessness? Because it seems to me, for example, that, you know, when cities like San Francisco and elsewhere are passing ordinances to try to make the poor more invisible, making it, for example, so that one cannot sleep on benches and so forth, even during the day or at night in parks or appear in certain areas of the city. And if one thinks about how the poor of Katrina, for example, have at the end of the day been treated, I don't sense that the country's too upset about this. And I find it a real shame that, you know, the richest country in the world cannot produce policies, and that politicians aren't interested in producing policies other than perhaps John Edwards and Obama to some extent, that really deal with this issue. And I just wondered what you had to say to that.
Well, public officials that I know of, I've had them say, well, you know, why should I be concerned about homelessness? Because homeless and low-income and welfare recipients don't vote as high as they should. And then I find out that we have many stereotypes and prejudices about homeless people. Homeless people are there because, and we always fill in the blanks, they're mentally ill, they're lazy, they choose to be homeless, they're alcoholic. And in many ways, we used to say the same things about members of minority groups in this country 40, 50 years ago, but today homeless people are people don't understand why people become homeless, and they don't know what to do, and they see them on the streets, and they feel guilty, and they just ignore their existence. And every winter, we lose people due to the elements, and even during the summertime, we lose people during the elements because living outside is unhealthy, and it can also be dangerous. Dangerous in the sense that you can be arrested in most cities for sleeping, begging, camping, and in some cities, if you're a volunteer of Food Not Bombs, a church group, a synagogue, feeding the poor in Las Vegas and Orlando,
right?
Fort Myers have all passed laws saying you can't feed the homeless in those cities. So it's definitely, there's a war going on against the poor and the homeless in our country right now.
Yeah, and what I don't understand is, I mean, there's this local war, but, you know, politicians, including Gore Bush and others, their behavior is so at variance with any effort to overcome the problem. The bankruptcy laws, I assume, are going to increase the poverty rate in this country, the kinds of changes they've made. And, you know, at every level, it seems to me, at least, that we're moving in, you know, unbelievable directions, even in historical terms. And I just, I congratulate you, and I hope that, you know, is there something that we as a general citizenry can do to get our politicians to pay attention to this?
Well, I think people in nearby Iowa or presidential primary states, whenever they're at a candidates forum, to raise your hand and, you know, what are you going to do to end homelessness and poverty in this country, to get people to go on record. Right now we have a president, from the president on down to Mayor Daley in Chicago, talking about ending chronic homelessness, developing 10-year plans. But unless we have some solid commitments behind those 10-year plans, we are going to be doing this kind of work for the next 20, 30 years. So I think we have to wait until some rock star, a pope, somebody running for president, to make ending poverty in this country a priority, because they have not been listening to the homeless agencies and the religious groups that have been serving and advocating for the poor for the last 25 years.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Just to stay with the subject of a criminalization of homelessness, which is one of the things that I wanted to make sure we really talked about, and part of our reason for wanting to do the program. There does seem to be this trend, and you touched on it, and the caller touched on it, in places around the country where they have moved to try to get rid of the problem, essentially by doing what they can to get rid of the people and to make it illegal to do those things that you said, to sleep outside, to eat outside, to beg, and also there have been places where, as you've said, they also have passed laws against feeding homeless people. So they're not only they're criminalizing being homeless, they're also criminalizing trying to help those people. How significant is this trend? Can you really actually say, if you look at towns and cities across the country, that there really is a trend in this direction?
Well, the first law against aggressive panhandling was passed in Seattle in 1984. The first law, anti-camping, Santa Cruz, California, in 1979. Cities around the country, initially they wanted to help homeless people, and they opened up their doors and sheltered people, but cities got tired of dealing with the problem. So since the mid-80s, cities all around the country have been passing laws with the purpose of driving away the visible poor out of the downtown areas. And in Orlando, where they have the no feeding law, so you can, if you want to feed squirrels and pigeons and doves, you can, but if you try to feed homeless people, you will actually be cited and or arrested. So we try to make the point that criminalizing homelessness has not worked in the past, and it should not be done. However, the trend is against us, and many cities are continuing to pass such laws, and that's why the National Coalition for the Homeless, we rank the 20 meanest cities every 2 years for violating the civil rights of homeless people, and Chicago is always on our list, and the number one meanest city in America today is Sarasota, Florida.
We're a little bit past the midpoint. We have some other callers we'll get right to. Just very quickly, let me introduce again our guest. We're talking with Michael Stoops. He is the acting executive director of the Washington, D.C.-based National Coalition for the Homeless. And they do have a website if you're interested in reading about the activities of the organization. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Urbana and line one. Hello.
Hi, I've been thinking as you're talking that when you read letters to the editor and see where the money goes to protect people, it's toward, quote, innocent life. And I guess that once you're born, you're not innocent and not as interesting. But there was an interesting program. The reason I dialed to start with is that there was an interesting program on Now with David Brancaccio at 7:30 this past Friday on WYLL-TV. And they were highlighting a program that houses homeless. It seemed to not be, the money seemed to be not for women with children, but for single, maybe just for single men. And I'm sorry, I can't remember what city he was showing this program. But the point was that homeless aren't just people causing merchants difficulties, tourist difficulties. They're also costing society a lot of money in emergency rooms. Mm-hmm. And the point of this one program was to get someone housed so that they could then help them with the medical and behavioral issues that were causing them not to be able to function and to get in and to use emergency services. I may not be stating the priorities exactly right, but the point was you don't try to get, for those who are homeless because of alcoholism or drugs, you don't say you have to be clean of those things first before we will provide you with housing. They say we will house you and we will give you support once you are housed. And they provide direct payment to the landlords for the housing. And one example they were showing, this man's seizures hadn't had a seizure since he had been housed, whereas before he'd been having seizures a couple of times a month, sometimes with hospitalizations, that were costing huge amounts of money. And he was behaving better in part because he had people who were following up with him and helping him deal with his issues. Now, as I pointed out, that was just one small aspect of the kind of person who was homeless. And Brancaccio pointed this out, that the money was not there for instance, women with children. But if we think about it, it has to be tremendously costly. If kids are not where they can get schooling, or not where they can get consistent health care, and where the parent can't get consistent health care, on top of what you're saying now. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, you want to? You can comment on that.
I think the program she's referring to is called Housing First, or in layman's language, supportive housing, where people, even though they're still drinking, are put into a permanent place to be, and then when they start like sleeping better, taking showers, attending AA meetings, and they see other people making it, their drinking reduces. And we have found that when people are put into permanent housing with supportive services, their success rate for single people is around 61%, and for families, it's 76%. And so we find it to be very cost-effective, and perhaps that's how we should sell the program to conservatives, that we will save us money if we start putting people into permanent places to be.
All right. Let's continue. We'll next talk with someone in Champaign, line number 3. Hello.
Hi. a quick comment and a quick question. The quick comment is the idea of trying to suppress the homeless by legal means is kind of like the kid putting his finger in the dike to hold back the water to have it spurt out somewhere else. I mean, all you're going to do is to shift these people from one place to another, it seems to me. But my question... Let me precede it by saying I consider myself a liberal person. I think that the distribution of wealth in this country is really an obscenity. But having said that, let me take a conservative position. What percentage of the homeless really want to be homeless? You touched on this earlier with a comment, but I'm really curious. Has anybody ever asked this question, going out and saying, look, if we offered you anything you wanted, would you take it? Mm-hmm. And the reason why I asked that, there was a book written years and years ago back in the 50s called Subways Are for Sleeping. Maybe you've seen this book. And this guy was a banker in the Midwest, and he gave up everything to become a bum because that's what he wanted to do. Is there any data like that floating around? I'd love to have it because I want to argue with my brother who's 3 steps to the right of Genghis Khan.
Well, I'll be sure to. I have not heard of that book, but I'll be sure.
It's a very, very entertaining book. Yeah. It gives you insight into how these people live.
Well, you know, one of the myths, many myths that we have about homeless people is that they choose to be homeless. And to be honest, I have met a few homeless people over the years that say, well, you know, this is okay. I like living in the woods. I like drinking every day, no responsibilities. But after you get to know them, they'll admit to you that they miss their family, that this is no way for a human being to live. But it's either their alcoholism or their mental illness or their lack of self-esteem kicking in. So what do you do with someone who says, I like being homeless or I choose to be homeless? You continue to work with them. What all homeless people have in common, in my opinion, little or no money, no family, no friends, no support system, and they're like out there trying to survive, and it's like a form of social Darwinism. How long can people survive without attending to the basic necessities of life? So you will find people who like being drunk every day, but they're addicted to alcoholism, and we still got to help them, and because no one has the right to freeze to death during the winter months.
No, I agree with that. In the book, Subways Are for Sleeping, though, let me give you just one quick vignette. This fellow was panhandling on Broadway one time, and somebody said, you know, I'll give you a quarter now, or I'll give you a dollar if you run some coffee for me up in my office. So he does this, and somebody says, oh, you're running coffee? How about getting some from me? Well, to make a long story short, within a month, he had a thriving business.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do? He gave it up. And then he decided, somebody told him, he said, you know, you're an intelligent person, you're university educated, why don't you write a book about this? So he did, and it became a national bestseller.
Wow.
And he became a millionaire, and he gave it all away and went back to being a bum again.
Mm-hmm.
And which I think is just absolutely fascinating. I'm a psychologist, incidentally.
Well, you know, many of us watched the movie this winter with Pursuit of Happiness starring Will Smith about the true life story of Chris Gardner. But I can tell you, and he was the guy that got Will Smith in the movie, got a job at the stock brokerage firm, Dean Witter. And I can tell you, I have never met a homeless person in 35 years, their way of getting out of homelessness was getting a job at a Wall Street firm. I wish that would be the case, but it's an oddity in this movement.
Well, anyway, interesting program.
No, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's continue here, and the next person will be in Urbana in line number 2. Hello.
Yeah, I heard you giving the list of Orlando, Las Vegas, and Seattle, but I wasn't in a place where I could write them down. So I was wondering if you could give me that again and maybe tell me where I could get a comprehensive list.
Yeah, on the National Coalitions for the Homeless website, nationalhomeless.org, there's a report under the heading Civil Rights called A Dream Denied, the Criminalization of Homelessness in U.S. Cities. And we track that report that came out about a year ago, tracks what cities are doing, making it illegal to be homeless. And we looked at 212 cities. So check out that report, and you'll see what cities have done. And I can tell you that the trend continues. And so it's a growing phenomenon.
You said Seattle was the first one starting in...
Seattle was the first... Santa Cruz in 1979 did an anti-camping law, and Seattle, Washington passed a law against aggressive panhandling in 1984, and cities since then have been copying the ordinances passed by other cities.
Okay.
So it's illegal to be homeless just about anywhere in America, and there's no nice... People ask me, well, if there's mean cities, is there any one nice city? And even in Champaign-Urbana, there are good programs and good people, but even Champaign-Urbana... If you're homeless, you could be arrested for being too visible in the downtown area.
Now, I always figured that Reagan caused homelessness. Is there any truth to that?
Well, when Reagan was governor, like in the 1960s, like all governors, they began the deinstitutionalization of homelessness. Reagan led the charge cutting important housing and social entitlement programs, and I think Ronald Reagan could be blamed for modern-day homelessness, but so can Bill Clinton. When Bill Clinton acquiesced to nudie and boys in terms of welfare reform, Bill Clinton actually caused as much homelessness, especially for families, as Ronald Reagan did. So that's why we say no matter who's in the White House, our work continues.
All right, well, thanks very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go next to a caller on our toll-free line in Sheldon, line 4. Hello.
Yes. We appreciate your station so much. I wish some of your guests could be on commercial.
I'm sorry, we lost the guest, the caller there. Maybe if she would like to try calling back, we could get back with her again. In the meantime, we do have another caller. This is line 1 in Champaign County. Hello.
Hi, is this me?
Yes.
Okay. I have a very, I guess, unique perspective on homelessness. I have a bachelor's in sociology from a top 10 university, and I've worked in homeless shelters. And due to unexpected health issues leading to disability and everything kind of unraveling, I, on and off for the past 2.5 years, have been either homeless or near homeless, and I just found out yesterday that I'll finally be receiving some social services that should come through in the next few weeks for safe and stable housing. But, I mean, this has been one of the most, I think, ironic times of my life. I've, you know, lived in my car. I've lived in a couple shelters. I've stayed on a couch in a shelter when they didn't have other rooms. You know, I've been chased and threatened, you know, late at night when I'm by myself, threatened to be raped. It's just really crazy. And I find that people frequently are unable to even, you know, a lot of people that I know socially, even disclosing some of the, you know, very, not even going into very many details, people's very progressive political views and things, if they feel like they can't immediately help, it's like they even frequently want to kind of deny. It's like too much for people to really see what other people are experiencing. And I have just experienced, I mean, I guess ridiculous amounts of prejudice and just things I didn't even really fully realize existed, and even had a lot of my own, I think, prejudices that I didn't even know I had kind of come to light, and all these assumptions about homelessness and people assuming somehow that everyone has a family structure that they're able to fall back on. And also, I think sometimes people not realizing that with certain disabilities, like I have really severe asthma issues, it really limits where I can live, even temporarily staying with friends. And it just turned into this huge, this huge dilemma of sometimes me having to move 9 times in a month, like even when I had a safe bed to sleep in, and my whole life revolving around trying to find out where I was going to sleep next. I mean, let alone trying to figure out health care. And, you know, even when I was able to see doctors, being able to keep the appointments and get there. And I just don't think people actually realize what it's like until experiencing it.
Well, people assume that it's easy to be homeless, as the caller describes so clearly, that being homeless is probably one of the worst things that could happen to a person other than going to war or getting really, really sick. A lot of homeless folks try to hide their homelessness because they know that just imagine if you go around and start telling people I was homeless all of last year, people would immediately start to assume, well, maybe he or she just got out of prison, they have a disability, they're alcoholic, they're criminal, etc. So people most homeless people I know don't put it on their resume that they're homeless. They try to hide the fact that they're homeless because there's a lot of discrimination against and misunderstanding about who the homeless are.
I think that's very accurate. I know that a lot of times it's like on the surface it wasn't apparent with me because people would just assume that because I could hold a conversation or something. And it's very interesting because I didn't even realize the challenges of, I'm very grateful for the time that I was able to be in a couple of shelters, although it was limited. But one of the times, I mean, you know, there was one phone line that was the hotline for the shelter, and it was near 20 adults and over 20 children also having to share the hotline to make job phone calls. And so it's interesting that there's all these stereotypes about, oh, people just don't want to look for a job, they don't want to do this, they don't want to do that. And, you know, when there are 30 people sharing a hotline and everyone's limited to 2 5-minute phone calls a day that are timed, and there's no way for them to even receive job phone calls back because it's the hotline for the shelter, it just sometimes feels like this big catch-22. And I know that one thing I didn't realize previously while I was doing social work is that food stamps as well, I'm extremely grateful that they exist, and they only extremely rarely actually cover someone's food costs. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, instead of putting time and energy into going out and even if someone is able-bodied looking for a job or finding other solutions, I found so much of my time and energy will go into, okay, figuring out, you know, like, I guess luckily I had some possessions, but can I go to the used bookstore and sell $5 worth of books to buy some potatoes today to last me until next week? And all these challenges that I'm really grateful for this program because I feel like a lot of this stuff other people need to know exists. And when you're just going day by day trying to figure out your needs for that day, it's so challenging to do anything for the long term. And people really don't seem to see or understand that frequently, I find.
Well, being homeless is a full-time job. There was a recent study done, and they found that the typical homeless person spends at least 35 hours a week going from point A to point B to point C, getting food, shelter, clothing, showers. It's a full-time job. It's hard. It's not an easy life, and shelters won't let you stay there forever. So many times people are forced to sleep outside. We have more animal shelters in this country than we have shelters for people, and I think we should treat people as equally as we do animals.
I want to thank the caller for her comments. I need to jump in here because we are almost out of time. In a minute or so, what would you like to, Michael, what would you like to leave with people?
Well, we can end homelessness and poverty in this country if the American people choose to exercise their political will. Let's make our people running for president, Democrat, Republican, Green Party alike, talk about ending poverty in America. The National Coalition is a great resource and advocacy group. And check out our website at nationalhomeless.org.
All right. Well, again, there we'll have to leave it with our thanks to our guest, Michael Stoops. He's acting executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless. And as he said, and as I said, there is a website for the organization. If you do have internet access, you can find out more about it. And if you want to look at that report, for example, that he mentioned about criminalization of homelessness, it is there. It is www.nationalhomeless, all as one word, nationalhomeless.org. And Mr. Stoops, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.